Hello and welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. I am Janet Garcia and joining me is Tim motherfucking Geddes. What is good?
So much. It's Game Awards Day. So much to be excited about. So much to be hyped about. I can't believe it. Hours away from the reveals, from the awards, from the hype, from the Keeley. Let's see what they're bringing tonight.
It is indeed the most wonderful time of the year. I'm sure we're talking about a bunch of content, but on that note, what game do you really want to see take home something?
I feel like this is such a great year in terms of diversity of games from indie all the way up to AAA and even like multiple AAA studios. So I want to see a diverse output of awards. Like I'm hoping we don't see kind of one team take home five different awards for the same game. Like I feel like with the action adventure and game of the year and all that stuff, like I hope there actually is a little bit of kind of like everybody getting to share, because like there's been so many wonderful games this year. So I think that that'd be a cool thing to see.
Yeah, pretty much same. Like, it's interesting because I did like a YouTube video like saying like what I think, like who I pick, right? Or, you know, if it was just up to me, like who I think is the best in each category, who I think will win. And even while doing that, like, so I had so many moments where I was torn, where I'm like, I think this game's the best, but like, I would love to see like this studio also like get credited because they made an incredible game. Like personally, if like Chicory or Life is Strange or any of those kind of like right underneath my personal game of the year, which is Deathloop, titles could take home something, I think that'd be really fantastic to see. So yeah, what happens?
On I guess more of a personal note than like that, I really would love to see Artful Escape get something, because that game is so special to me, and I don't think it's going to win anything, and I think that that's okay, honestly. I think that the competition that it's up against in the categories is insane, including Kena: Bridge of Spirits, which I really hope takes home the Indie Game of the Year, specifically because I think that it is an indie game on a whole other level. The fact that that is an indie game is wild to me, and I don't think the game is perfect. I think it's, you know, pretty far from perfect, but that being that team's first game, like, can you imagine what a second game could look like from them, especially if they get the clout and the juice of winning some game awards and all of that? Like, I just feel like that would be such goodwill going into their next project.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're also up for like best debut as well. Yeah. I think that would have been the category that, like, for me, I was like pushing for them for. So we'll see what happens. Artful Escape, I did not like nearly as much as you, but I do think it should win best art direction. I feel like the art direction is like the best part of that game, and also just incredibly stunning. Like, any single screen of that game could be printed out and hung up like on a wall. It's absolutely kind of crazy. And like, you never knew that, and that was the only thing I personally liked about the game. Like, I wasn't really a big fan of the other components, but I'm like, looks super pretty. So I think they like delivered really well on that part. But yeah, we'll see who ends up taking what home and what trailers or ads or whatever ends up happening. Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's always a fun time to see what comes out of Game Awards. Mm-hmm. Let's jump into today's stories, which include a strike fund for Activision Blizzard workers, a new Halo trademark, and the Players Vote Game Awards results and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. You can, if you're watching wrong, you can correct us when we get stuff watching live. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong, like right there, by going to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code KindaFunny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free, along with the exclusive daily post-show. Some housekeeping for you. PS I Love You XOXO is up right now, and it's our breakdown of Project Spartacus. That's up right now, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, podcast services around the globe as well, and we're watching along with the Game Awards that's happening tomorrow, which is today. It was obviously from yesterday. I'm now realizing tonight. What is the time on that? Because I had someone ask me on Twitter as well.
I don't know. Whatever the Game Awards starts, we'll be there. So.
All right. Sounds good. And thank you to our Patreon producers, Pranksy, Blackjack, and of course, I mentioned that Greg Miller returns to content next month. Today, we're brought to you by DoorDash, Honey, and American Giant, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin what is and forever will be The Roper Report. It's time
for the news. We have a fight for today. A baker's dozen.
Janet, I want to stop you real quick. I just want to let you know, that was the best intro I've ever heard you do. You nailed it from top to bottom. You got it. There was the confidence. There was some passion, some charisma in your voice. Love to hear it. I love working with you. Very excited to talk about some news with you today. Let's go.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's having the outdated information and random flubs that really like sells it. You know, again,
you ran with it. You know what I mean? You go with the flow. You got to love to see it.
Yeah, 100%. Speaking of things you love to see. Let's go ahead and talk about Activision Blizzard staff announcing the start of a new strike action. This comes from Matt Perslow over at IGN. The article reads, the APK Workers Alliance, a collective of Activision, Blizzard, and King employees, has initiated strike action against its employer. The group plans to continue its work stoppage until its demands are met. This follows walkouts from other Activision Blizzard groups, including Raven's QA department. Announced via post on Twitter, the group said today the ABK Workers Alliance announces the initiation of its strike. We encourage our peers in the game industry to stand with us in creating lasting change. In addition, the tweet also includes a link to a GoFundMe page, which allows supporters to provide financial donations to help participating Activision Blizzard and King staff through their work stoppage. For those who wish to join in solidarity, please consider donating to our strike fund, said the tweet. The fund has a goal of $1 million. The announcement of ABK Workers Alliance strike follows Monday's news of Raven Software's QA team walkout over the termination of contractors. Striking staff were supported by other Activision Blizzard workers in solidarity, and further walkouts happening in Texas, Minnesota, and California. There have now been multiple strikes at Activision Blizzard as the company continues to work its way through an ongoing sexual harassment and gender discrimination lawsuit. A first work stoppage occurred in July following the filing of the lawsuit from the state of California, and a second strike happened in November. ABK Workers Alliance also reported that Treyarch's Central QA team walked out on December 7th in support of the Raven work stoppage. Part of the ABK Workers Alliance demands is that Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick is replaced, while a group of shareholders have demanded he resign. The company board continues to back Kotick as CEO. And I do want to quickly just jump over to the GoFundMe itself, because at the time of us talking about this right now, it is currently at $65,385, supported by up to 1,000 people. Tim, react.
I mean, that's fantastic, right? I mean, especially with the numbers of only 1,000 people giving that much money, like that's where the power lies, right? It's power in numbers, and every single person, $1 helps, right? Well, 1 million people to get to their goal, that's not that many in the grand scheme of things when you start talking about the amount of people that listen to shows like this over the course of time, and especially over the course of the last 6 months as we've been talking about this, and you know, even longer as it's actually been going on. But this is great news. It continues to just kind of strengthen and strengthen the side of Bobby Kotick is going to eventually get booted. And I think that is one of the major goals of all these initiatives, and it is going to be a major call to action when that eventually forces the hands of the board members to make the real changes and to kind of create a shift that can get us past this point right now where it is just pure negativity surrounding even bringing up the words Activision or Blizzard. Like there has to be an end goal to this where we can move on, because otherwise they're just going to keep Bobby Kotick there, and this is just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. At some point it breaks. So this is just another great step towards all this. The Game Awards are tonight, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see what is said, how it's said, who uses their speeches to say what. All that's powerful, and it speaks loudly to these shareholders and to the board. So it's going to be an interesting time.
Yeah, I think bringing up the Game Awards is a really good point, because that's definitely a bit of an elephant in the room. Like, I think, you know, Keighley's had a couple statements and then amended those statements and then added to those statements. So I think people are definitely going to be watching the Game Awards, wondering, you know, if he'll say something, if other people getting awards will say something, and what might kind of get the ball rolling. Because I do think it could be one of those things where once one person speaks up, it becomes something that almost turns into a bit of a refrain. And I think the timing of this works really well for that, because there's a lot of attention just out there today, a lot of people tuning in, and that has like definitely a lot of potential as well. And what's great about this too is just it gives people who are outside of the situation looking in a way to do something. Obviously, not everyone has the financial means to donate to something, and not being able to donate is no, you know, indictment on anyone or a representation that you don't support those workers. But for people that were really struggling and just like wanting to help but not knowing how they can, this provides them a way to do that and can sort of, you know, empower fans and community members to feel like they're contributing towards this goal of making things better. And even just scrolling through like the comments with the donations coming in, you know, there's been a lot of like, you know, wonderful sentiments with, you know, pro-unionization, people saying like money talks so that workers can walk. Someone said, this is my, donated $35 3 minutes ago, said this is my gaming budget for the month. You know, I think, again, not everyone can donate, but if you can, I think it is important to do that. And it's only been picking up because, like, I think when I was drafting this up, it was only at like 20 or 40,000. So I think it's growing rather quickly. And, you know, as we talk about in the show and the news kind of hits and seeps through the industry over the morning, I think we're only going to see that number continue to rise. So, yeah, I was really excited to be able to see something like this, especially just because that's the unfortunate reality, right? Like, people need money. Like, that's a big reason that people are like at these jobs or in these situations. They're like, I have responsibilities and obligations, and this kind of can potentially not completely free that up, because, you know, $1 million is a lot, but it's not everything. You know, it's probably not enough for like something, you know, infinite or anything, but it's something, it's a bit of support. It kind of keeps it going because they just have to outlast management. And that's kind of going to be the challenge. So anything that can help them do that is going to be beneficial.
Yeah, totally. It's, again, this is such a horrible situation from top to bottom, but I do think that the fact that there is an actual action item that people are waiting for, and that is Bobby Kotick leaving in any way, shape, or form, I think is the moment that everyone's kind of waiting for and looking at and expecting. And if it doesn't happen, it's just going to continue to be an issue, and strikes like this are going to rightfully continue to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to Halo, the Endless trademark filed by Microsoft. This comes from Huron Crier over at Games Radar, who writes, Halo, the Endless has been trademarked by Microsoft. Earlier today, the new patent filing by Microsoft began circulating on Twitter. Over Justia Trademarks, it's revealed that Halo, the Endless, has just been successfully filed as a trademark by Microsoft. And in particular, the name specifically concerns new video game based software. Right now, however, there's absolutely no indication as to what we can expect from Halo the Endless, as the trademark filing itself doesn't give any information regarding the product. Some are speculating that this could relate to campaign DLC for Halo Infinite. While the Halo series has never dabbled in story-based DLC before in its storied run, Halo Infinite brings an open world into the fold for the very first time in the franchise, and theoretically, this opens up avenues for exploration for developer 343 to produce story-based DLC that bolts onto the existing open world. Even more interestingly, in a recent report that claimed Halo's Infinite open world was drastically cut down over the course of development, while 343 originally angled the sequel as a Zelda-like experience, the open world was cut down to something far smaller by summer 2019. Could 343 repurpose some ideas that were left on the cutting room floor for Halo the Endless if it does end up being an add-on to campaign content? Obviously, this is, you know, a trademark could just be a trademark for a trademark's sake, but what do you make of this, and do you think Halo DLC is something that people would be excited about? Are you currently playing Halo Infinite? Where are you at with this?
Well, I just went to thesaurus.com and I looked up synonyms for Infinite. So we got a, I'm exclusive. I might be the number three gaming journalist out here. I'm dropping some fire for you for the upcoming sequels. We have Halo Perpetual. We have Halo Eternal. We also have Halo Measureless to join Infinite and Never Ending, or whatever the hell this was called. The Taylor Endless. The Endless. There.
The Infinity Era kind of situation.
Exactly. Jokes aside, though.
Make some songs.
This makes sense to me. I think the Endless is probably some type of single player expansion to what we have with Infinite. I think that Infinite in its title kind of explains that this is a different type of Halo, especially it being on Game Pass, it being Xbox's kind of really revitalizing their biggest brand they've ever had with Master Chief. And they got it right. The reviews have spoken for themselves. Everybody that's playing this that Whether you're a Halo fan, not a Halo fan, like, people are finding something here. At the very least, it's an enjoyable, good game. At the most, it is the best game they've played in years. So 343 did something special with this. I think they're going to continue to add to it. And I'm excited at the potential of getting more single player stuff down the line, because, you know, the funny thing about video games is, single player wise, you play through them and then you beat it. And then all those years of waiting for the single player campaign is over. And it's like, I guess I'll wait for the next one. So I think this world of DLC, and especially Game Pass based kind of content drops, can change the way that these things are delivered and the timeliness at which they come out. It reminds me a lot of a couple years ago when Uncharted Lost Legacy came out, which is a much shorter campaign compared to core Uncharted games. But I really vibed with it, and I dug the idea of getting semi even annualized Uncharted style campaigns that were like smaller titles, and that ended up not happening for Uncharted, but we did see it with Miles Morales, and I expect that we'll see more experiments like that on the Sony side. I think it's set up for success even more on Xbox because of how easy it is to invest in Game Pass and just know that you have a fan base of people that are inherently there. So when a new content drops, especially something prestige like Halo, they're going to be there day one. You're going to get that audience. It's going to be worth doing more frequent drops, right, of AAA content. So that's what I'm expecting this to be. But I do think that that is making a lot of assumptions and a lot of leaps to get there, especially having Halo never had single player DLC. But it did have ODST, which was one of the earliest examples of what I just said about the Lost Legacy and Miles Morales type thing. So I don't know, but I am excited that Halo things are being trademarked. I'm excited that Halo's back. So this is good news for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think here's something I want to ask. How often do you jump into DLC for single player stuff?
See, it's funny because I think that, like, what DLC like, is, it's kind of like talking about indie games, or it's talking about downloadable games. Like, at some point, DLC,
what's the last campaign DLC you jumped into?
Well, like the Spider-Man ones I loved, and I played through all of those. And I guess that would be the last DLC that I played. But then it's like, I just think that single player DLC has kind of changed and isn't as frequent of a thing anymore. Now I kind of feel like it's more battle pass feeling, like even for something like a Far Cry or whatever, it kind of just feels like, hey, here's just some more shit for you to do, as opposed to like, here's a designed campaign expansion. And I think that those have turned into bigger, more ambitious projects like the ones we were just talking about.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I do think that we're gonna 2022 is gonna be interesting in terms of Halo, because it's sort of was the big thing that like kind of capped off the year in terms of the calendar year. But I think in terms of how we talk about games when we're discussing what the best experiences are of a given year, it's in this like weird limbo state of, you know, it didn't make it in time for Game Awards, so it'll be up for next year. And it's that struggle of how do you get people to remember this and stay with it? I think the updates that they have planned is going to be a big way to do that. And I think potentially Halo the Endless, if we see that come to fruition someday, could be in the near future, it could be another way to kind of keep those conversations going. With that note, what do you think it's really going to take to keep Halo relevant in 2022? Do you think it's automatically kind of set up for success because it has like a good formula and it has those updates planned? Or is there a world, like, how long do you think you're going to spend playing Halo?
I mean, a long time. I think that they nailed it. I think that they totally did the thing. I mean, from the campaign perspective, I'm going 100% this game. Like, already I know. And like, that is, to me, the utmost praise I can give a video game, a single player one, is I am having such a good time that I want to do every little check mark that it's asking me to do on the list. So last time I really felt that was Ratchet and Clank, and before that was Spider-Man. So they nailed that for me. And I'm really excited to dig into that on the single player side. Can't wait eventually when the co-op comes out, being able to maybe do a legendary run with the homies. But the multiplayer side, I feel like they know what they're doing. I love the cadence at which they're trying to release different modes, different content, like fun events and all that stuff. I think that the progression system isn't ideal for a lot of people, like getting them hooked in the way that, like, I wish someone like Nick would get hooked. It's the one thing really holding him back from being into Halo is the progression system, and that's unfortunate. But I do think that 343 knows what they're doing. They're being really, really transparent and communicative about their plans. And I think that we owe them the patience of trusting them, because they have delivered.
Tim, should I play this game? Should I play this campaign?
I don't know.
I was going to skip it, and I don't know what to do anymore.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you like first-person shooter campaigns?
Generally, no.
I don't know that this is going to, like, change your mind, but it's a really solid, really good, really great single-player campaign.
But, you know, and I've played, like, other campaigns, like, and other shooter campaigns, but I don't know. And I've only played one other Halo game, the first one. And I liked it. It was fun.
Oh, if you liked the first one, 100% play this then. Oh, my God, yeah. That's an easy answer then.
But like, I also played it with someone. Should I wait to co-op it with someone? Or should I just go on my own and just run around?
In my opinion, Halo is always better co-op. So if you can wait, might as well wait. Because it is going to be a blast. The game really feels like it was designed for co-op. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't work single player. That's true for all the previous Halos. But no, I mean, it's awesome. And I mean, even just play the opening hour. You're going to understand if you're in or you're out. I immediately was like, I'm in.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. And I, you know, Game Pass, it's like, it's there now. And like, everyone's talking about it. I'm like, I was just going to skip it because I'm like, oh, it'll just be something I just don't, you know, really ever get into. But I'm like, maybe this is the time. I don't know. And apparently we're here endlessly. Maybe, possibly. We'll see. Speaking of Halo, Halo Infinite wins the Game Awards 2021 public vote before it's even out. This comes from metro.co.uk, which writes, the Game Awards 2021 has its first winner, with the player's voice category going to Halo Infinite, even though it came out yesterday. Sidebar, so like the player votes always count. Like you can, like everyone listening to the show can vote in the Game Awards. The press determines kind of who you even see available. And it is a way smaller percentage. Like your vote has way less sway in the generalized categories. But this category, the players, what is it called? Player's voice, that's 100% public voting. So it's just kind of a place where, hey, if you want all control, that's where you can get all control. The piece continues. There were three rounds of voting, with the final five contenders being Forza Horizon 5, Resident Evil Village, It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, and Halo Infinite. You can see the results below. Halo Infinite won easily, despite the fact that nobody voting will have had time to play the story campaign. And this is the final breakdown of those player vote results. We had Halo at 35%, Metroid Dread at 22%, It Takes Two at 17%, Resident Evil Village at 15%, and Forza Horizon 5 at 11%. Thanks to the weird way that Microsoft released the game, the story campaign wasn't available to download until Wednesday, so Halo Infinite won the popular vote based purely on the multiplayer. Halo Infinite is not eligible for any of the main awards because it was released after the cutoff date for nominations, and at the time there was no knowledge of the multiplayer or anything like that. Tim, do these results surprise you, and do you think it was like weird, or was it appropriate to have Halo in here? Like, what's your opinion on Halo being in here in general?
I mean, look, game awards in general are such a silly thing, just because how do you put something in a genre? How do you put something in a bucket? How do you make it fair? How do you make it objective? You can't. That's not what the point is. This is the player's voice category. Literally, it means nothing. We just want to give y'all something to engage with, okay? I'm not surprised by this at all. At the end of the day, personally, I think that Halo's multiplayer suite is up there in the Game of the Year conversation, so I'm not surprised that this is there. It was a weird rollout plan, but video games have weird rollout plans nowadays. I think the breakdown here is not surprising at all, because it really just kind of speaks to awareness and how much engaged members of these communities are trying to fight for their game. So, yeah, looks like a pretty solid split here, but yeah, the people that are playing Halo, I think Halo's easily the most mainstream of these video games. So, and the multiplayer is free.
that's another part of it too, for sure. And I think also, you know, maybe it's funny seeing some of the things that from the out, like people that are outside of like any of the voting stuff, like the formal stuff that press does or influencers do, always talk about, like, you know, criticize the results or talk about like what maybe they would have done. And it's funny though to see, you know, Halo up here, which, you know, maybe that's true. You know, it obviously, the multiplayer is super heralded. The vast majority of people love it. But it's also the most recent thing on this list. So
Halo belongs with this list of games. Like, which way it does.
Yeah, like I'm surprised too to see that, like, you know, I think recency bias could play a little bit of a factor. Again, that's not to take away from it, but it is the most recent thing on here. I'm a little surprised to see how high Metroid Dread was, because if we're thinking of mainstream stuff, I would have thought Village might have been in the second But it was also like really early. Like, what do you, are you surprised to see Dredd up here so high?
No, because the Nintendo fans, right? Like, there are people that are voting. This is the players voting for shit. This is the same people that vote on polls on Twitter and shit. Like, this award is literally just like, let's give the people something so they have the thing. That's it. The same thing with the most anticipated game award. Everyone gives that shit. You need to understand why it exists. Think about it just a little bit. Look at all the categories and which ones are dissimilar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny too to see Horizon 5. Like, that's not surprising that that's at the bottom. I'm surprised it even made it that far, to be honest, given its niche. But yeah, you know, I always find these kind of interesting, seeing, you know, if left to just the open public, what would the results be? And it kind of always makes me think about what the larger award show would be if it was like a more public facing thing. But
let me
put
it this way. If Elden Ring was on this list, it would have won.
But from the closed test.
Yeah, straight up. Just because that's how voting like this works, when it's just public and everyone's opinion is equal.
I feel like that one's extreme. I feel like that one took it too far. I don't think, I think it would be up there.
I don't even have a question. The audience that's voting on this is the Elden Ring audience. For sure.
I feel like I want to have more faith. Is this true? Like, do people think, I don't know. I don't know. People in chat would have won. It would have give us the mirror shield. Give us the power.
You clearly haven't, and I'm not recommending you to. And I know you know better, but you haven't been looking at like the chat, the proper Game Awards chat or Summer Game Fest chat as the show's happening. All it is Elden Ring, Elden Ring, Elden Ring. Where's Elden Ring? It's like, okay,
You're right. That probably would happen. Also, there's always if someone can make a poll in our Twitch chat, I want to know. You have to just do it to be petty. That's the thing. But then people are in general are petty. Like, this is the, like, we're the problem. E creates 1,000%. Yeah, y'all, you know what? Y'all are right. I had too much faith in reason. That was my mistake. It was wrong to trust. Let's move off of this and do a little bit of a looking back and a retrospective stuff with NES and SNES creator Masuki. Yomura dying at 78. This comes from Ryan Gilliam over at Polygon, who writes, the lead architect of the Nintendo Entertainment System and Super Nintendo Entertainment System, Masayuki Yomura, has died. The Ritsumeikan Center for Game Studies at Ritsumeikan University announced Yomura's death on Thursday, saying he died December 6th at the age of 78. Yomura first joined Nintendo in 1972. And worked with the company to build Light Gun Games, hoping to create the predecessor to Duck Hunt. Wow. After moving to Nintendo's new R&D2 team, he headed up the squad's home console initiative, a mandate from then president Hiroshi Yamaguchi. Yomura began development on the Famicom, the Japanese name for the NES, in 1981, in an attempt to bring the arcade to players' living rooms. R&D2 launched the Famicom in 1983, and Yomura's team built its successor, the SNES, known as the Super Famicom, in Japan, for its 1990 release. Before retiring in 2004, Yomura also helped build games like Ice Climbers, Cuckoo Land, Soccer, Baseball, and Golf. I like those are just the name of the sport. While he remained a research and development advisor in retirement, Yomura served as a professor at Ritsumeikan University in Kyoto, Japan, teaching video game development to a new generation of creatives. And for this, I want to pull in a question from Kebabs, who writes into the show, just like you can if you head over to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, and writes, what's up, KFG crew? To honor the passing of Masayuki Yomura, the man who designed both Famicom and Super Famicom, what favorite/underrated hardware feature do you want to highlight? It could be the Super FX chip, the introduction of shoulder buttons, or including the slots on the Famicom to dock the controller. Thanks and keep being awesome. And then to add to this, I also want to toss in just general software shout outs. Because for me, definitely thinking of my memories of the SNES, which I played when I was like 5. I wasn't, you know, deep into the weeds on the hardware specifications of it. Though I do like that Kebabs brings up the docking of the controller, because I think it's so fun looking at Nintendo's history and really seeing the ways that it sort of pulls in old ideas, because, like, is that not the Switch? And I think that's, like, just a really fun parallel. But, yeah, what things stand out to you from your time? And I have the mini consoles here, to kind of, you know, be
there
keeping.
There we go.
But what's your history with these devices?
Oh, I mean, the Super Nintendo is my console. Like, that was the first console I ever owned. Got it way late, but it was amazing. And, I mean, I always think that I grew up the luckiest gamer in the world, because my first game that I owned was the Super Nintendo that came bundled with the Super Mario All-Stars Plus World cartridge. So I got the SNES remake of Mario 1, 2, 3, Lost Levels, and Mario World all on one cartridge. And that was just my introduction to video games. Like, the most OP intro of all time. I don't think a single cartridge has ever had more quality gameplay experience than that single one. But yeah, no, I absolutely love the Super Nintendo. One thing I want to give a shout out to hardware feature-wise is I really love the button layout on the SNES, where the left and top face buttons are concave compared to the down and right ones. And I just think it really feels good on the thumb. And of course, the shoulder buttons, like, that just allowed so much more versatility in gameplay. Like, when you compare an NES game to an SNES game, and like, even looking at something like The Legend of Zelda, and NES versus SNES, like, just being able to map different weapons and different abilities to different buttons, like, opens up gameplay so much. So shout out to that. I also want to give a shout out to just the way this article is written, saying before retiring in 2004, he helped build games like Ice Climbers, Cuckoo Land, Soccer, Baseball, and Golf. Those were all games from like 1986. So I don't know why they said before retiring in 2004, but
technically not true.
It's a true statement. Yeah, true statement. Just a little weird to say it that way. But it's funny because, you know, Soccer, Baseball, and Golf, like, those featured Mario as a referee. Like, those were the kind of origin stories of the Mario sports titles that we got, that really kind of came into their own on the N64 Game Boy Color era and forward. But definitely RIP to this. This is a sad day. Legend in the industry, but definitely will not be forgotten.
Yeah, you know, I am realizing now as you're talking, where you mentioned the SNES being your first console, like, how did you get into games? Did you just ask for, like, did you just discover games and you're like, this seems cool, can I have a console? Like, what was your process getting into it?
Well, I think it was just like a 90s kind of swell of video games are cool. Like, you know, there was the Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon and the Mega Man cartoon. Just like, you couldn't really get away from it. If you were a kid, video games were just, they were the goal, right? Like, you go to Toys R Us and it's like the featured element would be the video games, like the things that they really like would put on the I forget what they're called, but like the lane heads at
end caps
of shelves and stuff, where it's like, what are they focusing on? It's like they're trying to push you to get these, to get you into video games and get you addicted and hooked when you're young, you know.
Was it on like a birthday list? Was it something that you were surprised with? Like, how was
the quickest version of this is my dad, someone gifted him a Commodore 64 when I was in second grade, and there was some games on it, and I played a couple of them, and I was immediately fell in love, where I'm like, I love this. I love controlling whatever the hell is on the screen. And then once I realized, like, oh, this is what a video game is, like, these are things that exist, it kind of like really quickly avalanched and snowballed, where I grew up with Kevin, and his mom was the biggest fan in the world of going to garage sales. So a big part of our childhood would be going to garage sales and like finding dope deals. And this was, you know, 10 years after the NES, so a lot of people were getting rid of them, and we both got amazing deals where, like, infamously, we spent $14, and it got us an NES, like, 20 games, like, 5 NES controllers. You don't even need that many. Multiple light guns. Like, it was the best come-up ever. And pretty much from then on, we were addicted. But I didn't get my own console until years later with the Super Nintendo.
Nice. Yeah, that's a really cool story. The deals, especially, like, I think entering Nintendo through deals is, like, such a rarity, because things are so, like, so keep their value now. It's, like, weird to imagine being able to come up like that at this point. Yeah, for me, my first console that I had any access to was the SNES. And it was actually the SNES Junior model. Way after the fact. So, and then for the longest time, like, that in my mind, I'm like, this is what the SNES looks like. So then it took me so long to get used to, like, the proper model design visually, because it was not, like, I'm used to the weird, tiny, like, all smoothed out one, because that's the one I grew up with, and I would love to buy that one again specifically, because that's the model, like, I remember from being a kid. And really, for me, like, we got into it because my brother sort of spearheaded. He was 6 years older than me. You know, he wanted, to get into games, and they're like, it's really expensive. Like, here, let's start you off with just the SNES Junior, which is, like, you know, it's cheaper. I think it came with some, like, pretty good bundled stuff, too. And it's like, if you stick with that and you like it, then this can be something that we'll, you know, buy for you from time to time. Yeah, exactly. But like, we're not going to drop like a couple $100 or whatever, however much it costs, just to have it sit there if you're not going to use it. So like, it was probably the first moment of like, are you a real gamer? But like, from my family, I guess.
Love it. That's so funny.
Yeah. So, so he had that, and you know, he's always been down to like, you know, share his game stuff. Like, we've always shared everything together. So that was the first console I ever had. One of my first gaming memories was playing Yoshi's Island, which is still one of my favorite games ever. Another great
game of all time. Let's go.
It, like, honestly, like, I've played it, like, not too long ago, because it's in, you know, the NSO collection and everything like that, and I struggle to think of anything that's to say negatively about that game. It's just great. There's not, like, again, I don't like, you know, I don't think anyone really likes doing the, oh, a game can be perfect or whatever, but
I'm literally playing it right now.
Are you serious? Where, are you trying to do a completionist run, or are you just...
I'm so... Yeah, to keep this quick, I have never 100%ed it. I've never gotten 100 score on every single level, and I decided I'm finally going to do it. I beat this game hundreds of times, but I've never fully done it, so I'm going to do it finally.
Yeah, it's so good, and there's like so many weird secrets in that game too. Like, it's just a fantastic title. So like, that's definitely one of my fondest memories from, you know, that hardware. And yeah, you know, and then afterward, like when my brother got the N64, like we just kind of, for sake of setups, like divided it where I had the SNES in my room and he had the N64 in his room. You know, eventually I got PlayStation, and then he just, you know, we had the PlayStation consoles, he had the Nintendo consoles, and we would just visit each other to, you know, play whatever. Just because it's like, it's easier than setting. We didn't have like a living room setup where we could just have them there and like easily play. So that's kind of why we split it down that way. But yeah, definitely a lot of fond memories from that. You know, I think it's always a good time to look back and think about who created the things that, you know, not only fostered, you know, my love for games, but also my love for Nintendo and so many other things. So, you know, shout out to this creator, and condolences to peers, family, fans. It's always sad losing somebody, but it's nice to take time to sort of honor that memory through celebrating the work that they created. Now let's go ahead and get a word from our sponsor. Remember, you can go over to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let's hear from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. There's no denying it. It's officially the holiday season. And after all that Thanksgiving cooking you just did, plus the cooking you're about to do for whatever other holiday you celebrate, you're probably not going to want to add tonight's dinner to that to-do list. So let DoorDash take care of it. You can also get groceries and other essential items delivered with DoorDash. I love DoorDash. We use it constantly. And it is such an easy thing to use for me and Gia when we're just trying to hang out, watch something, keep it simple for the night. Next thing you know, food's being delivered. It's safe, it's secure, and we are no longer hungry. For a limited time, you guys can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code GAMES2021. That's 25% off, up to $10 value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code GAMES2021. Don't forget, that's code GAMES2021 for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. Next up, shout out to Honey. It's gift giving season, and you have no excuse to buy everyone you love the worst, cheapest gifts imaginable. Why? Because Honey is about to save you tons of money when you shop online. Honey is your personal online shopping assistant. It scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best ones it finds to your cart. It's so easy to use. Everyone should be doing it. I've been using it for years. I've saved literally thousands of dollars, both for me and for Kind of Funny, using Honey. You install it once, you never need to think about it again. It's just saving you money. If you don't already have Honey, you can be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free, installs in just a few seconds, and by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this show. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/games. That's joinhoney.com/games. And finally, shout out to American Giant. If there's one good thing that came out of the mess that 2020 and 2021 have been, it's that people have started to prioritize comfort over style. You know what I'm talking about. But with American Giant's obsession with quality details, you can be comfy, cozy, and stylish. I love American Giant. I recently got a bomber jacket. Nobody's surprised, but it's this really pretty blue. I've never seen one like it, and I am a big fan. It's super comfy, keeps me warm, just like I like. American Giant is about the journey, not just the destination. They're obsessed with the details from start to finish, so they use the best quality materials and support local manufacturers and workers, which is always great. Slate called their hoodie the greatest hoodie ever made, so find out why Explore American Giant's collection of durable essentials at American-Giant.com. And you can get 20% off when you use code KFGD at checkout. That's 20% off at American-Giant.com, promo code KFGD. American-Giant.com, promo code KFGD.
All right, now let's talk about Xbox's Winter Game Fest, which offers 36 demos of upcoming indie games. This comes over from Eurogamer, which writes, the ID at Xbox Winter Game Fest demo event has returned in partnership with tonight's The Game Awards, offering 36 demos for unreleased indie games on Xbox One and Series X/S. The event runs until December 21st, at which point you won't be able to download them anymore, although these should still be playable if you have them on your console. So definitely worth heading over and downloading those. It's worth remembering these demos represent a work in progress and so may not represent the full game at their release. And in this Eurogamer piece, they specifically highlight Death Trash, which features a post-apocalyptic world where cosmic horrors. Also, I love the name Death Trash.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm just going to download it because it's called Death Trash, which now is giving me flashbacks to two. Like, I went through a lot of PS Now stuff recently for a review, and there's like that game Trash Panic, which it's like Tetris with trash, but you're like breaking stuff. I had no idea what to do in that game. The game never explained it. My chat didn't know. It had the world's loudest audio design that I've ever experienced. But anyway, this is not that game. Death Trash, of course, where you long for humanity, but are met by punks in shotguns. It combines old school role playing and modern action gameplay. And player freedom, create your own character, and explore this unique handcrafted world. And they also shout out Nobody Saves the World, which has, you know, definitely been heavily advertised. We complete quests to discover and swap between more than 15 varied and distinct forms, mix and match abilities to unlock and complete even more challenging quests, while exploring a vast overworld and extensive dungeons, either solo or with a friend online. And then we're going to quickly just run through the full list of games. Feel free to shout out any ones that you know or particularly excited about. We got Apico, Aspires, Ina's Tale, Aztec Forgotten Gods. This one I'm interested in, like for the culture, though their last game or one of their recent games, Mulaka, I was not into. But I also played for the culture because I'm like, oh, it's like Oaxaca based. It's about like this like running based tribe. I'm like, this is like checking all my boxes here. And I'm like, wasn't a big fan, but I'm excited to check out this one and see how it goes. There's also Best Month Ever, Black Tail, Blind Fate, Ido no Yami, Breakers Collection, Castle on the Coast, Chenso Club, Death Trash, Demon Turf, Flu Fi's Adventure, which I like how storybook like that sounds, like Flu Fi Fo Fum type style. Freshly Frosted, Grid Force, Josh's Journey. Yes, exactly. Josh's Journey, Darkness, Totems. I think, did I read Grid Force? I think I read Grid Force. Justice Sucks, Recharged. True. Kraken Academy, Lonesome Village, Loot River. I don't know if you remember seeing this at like a showcase, like some indie showcase, but Loot River is like that weird game where you're like moving these pieces across like, you know, the oceans. And I think it might be like Rogue or something, but I remember seeing that a lot. So that's definitely one that I'd want to check out from here. Mind Scanners, Nobody Saves the World, Outbreak, Contagious Memories, Overpass, Rhythm Road Trip, Princess Farmer, Raku Venture, Space Boat, Space Lines from the Far Out, Super Toy Cars Off-Road, The Chase of Ellen, The Darkest Tales, The Gardener and the Wild Vines, and The Last Ore Crew. So those are all, oh no, and a few extras. The Tale of Bistoon, Treasures of the Aegon, Tunic, and What Lies in the Multiverse. Tunic has been such a, like, it has been at every one of these. Like,
I can't believe it's not out.
It honestly, like, it's a lot. And it's funny because, you know, people always ask, like, especially like in our space about, you know, games you're looking forward to or like high level. And, you know, there's plenty of like big AAA things that I look forward to. But for me, the things that I always remember or feel the most like visceral pain from, and this is like not any indictment on like any studios that take a long time to, you know, get stuff out the door because making games is hard. But the indie space, because this, like, you know, if people think things get dragged out in AAA, like, we usually see stuff when it's a lot closer to being released, I think, in AAA. And I imagine due to resources and other things, it might be not easier to get it out, but I think there's a little bit more awareness of the timeline and the, you know, struggles that might go into it and additional supports to sort of facilitate that process. But man, in the indie space, like, I'll be like, I used to buy back the Kickstarter 12 years ago and we're finally here. And then it's funny too, because sometimes it comes out and I'm like, it was just all right. And I'm like, time to do it again. And I like do this all the time. But yeah, Tunic.
Yeah.
Play it again. Try it again. Like, you know, definitely one of those things for sure.
Yeah. Lou River, you're right. I just looked up the gameplay of this. This is this was a standout for us during this year for indie events and stuff. So the fact that there's a demo you can go play, that's really cool.
Yeah, for sure. Are you a big demo person? Like, what are some of the last demos you played or some memorable demos you've experienced?
I mean, back in the day, I was a huge demo person on the PS2 era, like for sure, with, the, you know, official PlayStation magazine, official Xbox magazine, like loved that stuff, the PS2 jam packs. But yeah, in more recent times, especially with the rate at which we are lucky enough to get preview codes for things, I'm usually not a big demo guy.
Do you prefer, so on that note too, like for like Loot River, like would you want to check something like that out, or would you prefer to wait until you have like a more formalized build, whether that's like the full game or like an official preview thing?
I personally like to wait till I have a full game. Like, I'm a stickler. I don't really like repeating sections of games. Yeah. Like, I like going back to replay games, but I don't like, oh, I played half this game, now for the review, I need to play through the whole thing. So, yeah, like substantial demos, not for me. But you know what? I am not representative of a lot of people out there. And I think it's awesome they're doing this. And I love that it's a part of the Game Awards. And I love that Jeff pushes this and partners with Xbox and with the right people to get these awesome games, these awesome indies specifically, into people's hands and to raise awareness in a way that I'm definitely not doing.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think it's, you know, always nice to have the option for people to just check out these things. I think it's also really cool that, you know, allegedly, like at least according to this article, once you download them, you can still play them, because I personally find like the timeline for demos to be a little stressful, because it's usually like, you know, it's a decent amount of time. It's like a month. But with so many games that are often included in, you know, showcases like this or like options like this, it's hard to get through them all. So I like the idea of just being able to have them there and jump into them if you end up finding the time for it. Yeah, for me, I'm also not the biggest demo person. I like to do it a lot when I'm maybe on the fence of getting something that's already out, you know, on like the eShop or something. I'll hit up demos pretty frequently, and there have been some like really incredible, you know, I think we think about the era of demos a lot in terms of, you know, the old school like disc era, but honestly there have been some incredible like demo options, especially for like, to your point, where they do let you transfer over the progress. So those are definitely my favorite ones if I can ever get a shot at those. For something like this, I like to just run through a bunch of them. So it's one of those things where I'm either going to play like half of these or like none of them. So we'll see what it ends up being for me. But anyway, demos are so far away. If I want to know what's coming to mom and grab shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today is Monster Ranch 1-2 DX on Switch, PC, and iOS.
Monster Rancher. Can we talk about that for a second, Jenny?
Yes.
Did you ever play this? Are you aware of what Monster Rancher is?
Should I be?
No, you don't need to be. But
it's exciting, though. It's so cool.
So here's the deal. Back in the late 90s, this thing came out called Pocket Monsters in Japan, right? And then you got to catch them all, Pokemon. Everyone fucking loves it. And then what happened? Iterations and iterations. And everyone had to have their own Pokemon, right? So we had Digimon. We had, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Eventually, like a bunch of different takes on the same type of idea of how do we monetize cartoons and card games and video games all in one, whatever. Monster Hunter was super dope. It had a cartoon that I really appreciated. It was pretty damn awesome. But the video game was on PlayStation, so it was a little bit more adult compared to the Pokemons of the world. The way that you got monsters was by actually opening, while you're playing the game, opening the disc tray of the PS1 and putting random CDs in, and the CDs would unlock monsters. So you're finding Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory CD, you put it in, and that creates a monster from the game. And it's like unique to that, unique. Some CDs actually had like unique things tied to them. But then you're taking like AOL trial discs, throwing those motherfuckers in, trying to catch them all that way. It was such a creative, fun thing. And I loved the interactivity of the real world with the video game. Is it a great game? I highly doubt it. How it's going to work on Switch, I don't know. But anyways, it was a really cool idea.
Tim, do you remember any aspect other than going to like the little temple and like making the monsters?
No.
Me neither.
I don't.
Was there anything else to it?
I have no idea. I watched every episode of the cartoon, so I know that shit.
Sure.
But I do not remember the game, besides getting the monsters.
The kid looked like they were like, oh, you know what's cool? Ash. The kids like Ash. But let's try to mix Sonic into him. Like, let's make him groovier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Groovy's a good word.
Yeah.
Groovy. Real good word. Okay. I don't know what to do with this information, but I'm glad you shared it with me. Nothing. I don't know.
Don't do like, anything.
Okay. All right. We got Monopoly Madness, Xbox One, PS4, Switch, and PC. Loop Hero on Switch. And I feel like called out by this release because I'm like, I played it on PC and I liked it fine. You know, I'm like, oh, it's pretty good. Like, I would play a lot more if it was like on Switch or on my iPad. And now they're like, oh, it's on Switch. And I'm like, oh, I'm like,
my bluff.
Now, like, oh, are you going to? So I feel like a little personally attacked by this. But go play Loop Hero if you haven't already. And I think it definitely does lend itself best to handheld. Maybe that's just my anti-PC bias. I don't know. But Loop Hero is a great game. We got Witchwood for PS5, PS4, Series X/X, Xbox One, and PC. We got Mini Madness for Xbox One, After the Fall, PS4, and PC, Antarctica 88 for Xbox One, Super Impossible Road for Switch, Kobayashi Recollection for Switch, Rico London for Switch, and Stuffed for PC. Let's go ahead and jump to You're Wrong before we start to close out. If we have anything, oh, it's loading in. I'm not seeing anything. I think we had a flawless run, which also part of me is like, wait, I'm not seeing anything because it's just not pulling in the stuff. But no, there's not.
No.
There's not even that weird thing where people will be like, this isn't a you're wrong, but like, I just felt like saying something. And I'm like, okay. There's not that either. It's just, it's all quiet on the Western front, which is kind of wild. So shout out to you, Tim. Good job.
Impeccable. I love to see it. Garcia Getty's information squad, baby.
We do have like a, you know, a tiny bit of extra time here. So I want to, you know, normally I pull in like reader mail or stuff, but we, you know, I already had the one that I pulled in for the show. I have a question for you, Tim. Normally I would save this for the post show. So if y'all ain't hitting the post show, you know, it is what it is, but y'all missing out on good content because we have some real fun conversations in there. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you something and everyone, all y'all hear something that I posted on Twitter today. As I mentioned before we start recording, I have a flight tomorrow morning. What do I watch, play, do on the plane during this flight? It's long as hell. It's like 4 hours and 40 minutes. Then I have a 3-hour layover. Then I have another hour and 40 minutes. So I'm living in the sky in these terminals. And also just sidebar, like how do you normally kill time on planes and in airports? Like, do you game at all or is that all just like Netflix time?
The way I kill time on and the whole airplane process is by spending approximately 3 days prepping for it, downloading a ton of videos onto my iPad, downloading a ton of comics onto my iPad, getting games on my Switch, getting everything ready, right? Making sure all my playlists for music are there, get some podcasts, do all that stuff. And then I spend the majority of my flight sitting there kind of pondering which one I should do first. That takes a good 2 or 3 hours. And then I usually end up just putting on music I've listened to 100 times and I listen to that and then we land and it was all for naught. So maybe don't listen to my advice for all of this, but in terms of shows that I would recommend, if you haven't seen yet, an amazing journey in the air would be watching the show Pen 15.
Oh my God.
That is on Hulu.
What a ride that would be.
Yeah.
Watch it, not all of it.
Oh. Say it again.
Do you like Janet?
I've watched not all of it. Sorry. Go ahead.
The it's over now. The final part of season two, which is the end of the show, just came out last week and it is phenomenal. And I keep saying this, but this part of the season, like the final bit of this show, took it from me for like, oh, this is a funny show to like, damn, this is one of my favorite shows of all time. Like they really stuck the landing and stuck the journey as well. Like it's something special. So show wise, I would recommend that. I mean, gaming wise, we were just talking about it, but like, why not play through Yoshi's Island again?
You know, honestly, because you can, it's like downloaded, right? I'm trying to remember. It doesn't have to be like online because it's through NSO.
Yeah, it's you can download it. You don't need online. Yeah. You just need to check in online once every 30 days.
Okay.
And just make sure you do that before you go, because I have been fucked before and it's been very, very bad. Dude, Nintendo could be so annoying with this shit. Like when Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl just came out and I had like the pre-release copy of it, it when you're playing pre-release games, it always does that. It's always pinging for the internet. And Gia and my brother were like out running like a marathon, and I was just waiting for them because I wasn't running the marathon. But like I was letting them do it, and I was like going to congratulate them and all that shit. So I had like some time to waste, and I'm like, cool, I'm going to play Pokemon in the car. Guess what? No, I didn't, because you have to connect to the internet, and that sucks. So make sure you connect your Switch before you before you go.
If I was playing anything else from NSO on the plane, what should that be?
Have you played through Star Fox 64?
I haven't.
Okay, I would say that.
Is that because it's meta? Because I'm flying? Is that why?
No, because it's an amazing video game. Star Fox 64 is one of one of the best holding up N64 games. Best, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
right?
No, I get it.
It holds up the best. It holds up the best.
This is like the retired in 2004 situation again, where it's like, it's not wrong, but it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, totally. But it's definitely worth your time. And specifically because the characters and the banter is so good. And it's just like, it's honestly unmatched. And they've remade that game like 5 different times. It somehow always make it worse. The exception of the 3DS version, which like was literally a remake of 64 and was awesome. But Star Fox 64, you could beat the entire thing in like 45 minutes. But there's a lot more content after that because there's multiple paths you can take
finishing something in 45 minutes. Because again, my whole thing, you know, like Greg has his platinums, like I have just rolling credits on things, and I won't play something just because it's short. But if I'm interested and it's short, I'm like, oh, well now like you just have to not deeply offend me. I'll just see it through the end. Like we're so close already. That sounds good. So yeah. I might hit that up. I'm not sure how. I don't do too much like playing games when I'm like flying or traveling. It kind of depends on like what the mood is, but I try to just give myself a couple options. So I think Yoshi's Island again for no reason is always a good choice. So we'll see what I end up. I have to download all my stuff tonight. I'm kind of cutting it close. So after this, I think I'm just gonna sit and start downloading. Also, I'm the same way with music, where I'm like, what if we listen to the same album that we've been listening to for 27 years and just put that on repeat? That's great. So I'm going to download those. But yeah, I'll let y'all know what I end up playing or consuming while I'm, traveling. But on that note, tomorrow's hosts are Tim and Jared Petty, which I'm so jealous that you get to do a show with Jared. Like, that sounds so fun. How'd you make that up?
If you want to take it, it's yours.
I'm traveling.
Oh, you're traveling. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But no, I'm very, very excited to reunite with Jared. It's going to be a fun show, too, because it's literally just going to be going through the Game Awards winners and announcements. So super fun show for tomorrow. Get hyped, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. God, can I even tune in? I don't know if I'll be in a place where I could tune into that, but if I can, I will.
Jared's going to bring the energy for sure.
Also, is it true that after this on Twitch, it's Halo or is it different?
It is not. No,
it's not here. That might also suck.
The boys are going to be playing Icarus. We're partnered with NVIDIA for this, and it's a very, very, very pretty game. So check it out to see all the RTX, all those rays will be traced.
Okay, awesome. And if you want to catch that stream later, be sure to subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. We're each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Rerun you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those who are sub the silver level at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.